Hi, Smart Community friends. Welcome back to the summer series here on the Smart Community Podcast. As you know, we are taking a little break from new content over the Australian summer holidays, and instead we're sharing the replays of a few of your all-time favourite episodes. This week, we're sharing my interview with Chungha Cha from episode 110. This interview was recorded in early 2019 and then aired in mid-2019 while I was away on my Churchill Fellowship trip. Chungha Cha is the co-founder and chair of the Reimagining Cities Foundation. Cha discusses his background in finance and how he became passionate about smart communities, plus some of the organizations he works with around the world. Cha tells us how he thinks Korea is currently embracing smart concepts, projects he is working on, and why accelerating smart communities is the most effective way to positively influence whole cities and regions. We discuss the gaps and the greenwashing that can exist between different disciplines and some of the ideas for better integration. We finish our chat discussing the emerging trend of overwhelm in the face of the urgent climate crisis and why we need financial arguments, not just people or not just planet-focused arguments, in order to achieve true sustainable outcomes. We'll be sure to get Cha back on the show in the future for a full update about what he's been up to and also how our thinking has progressed since this conversation. But in the meantime, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Chungha. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you, Zoe.
That's great to hear. Let's jump straight in. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Oh, thank you. Well, first of all, Zoe, thank you for having me here today. I'm very excited to share with you some of my thoughts and stuff that I've learned over the past.
I'm excited to have you.
Yeah. So my background, well, you know, how far shall I go back? I was born in Seoul. But kidding aside, my background is finance. I've been in the finance industry for over 20 years, and I became very passionate about smart cities a little over 10 years ago when I started to work in green buildings and smart cities. And I've been going to a lot of conferences, meeting a lot of the experts all over the world to see what's going on, global trends in smart cities. I'm based here in Seoul, but I'm actually more active outside of Korea than in. And I do that by collaborating with some of the well-known global organizations. First one being, say, the Smart Cities Council based in Washington, D.C. And one of my favorite smart cities heroes is Adam Beck of Smart Cities Council based in Austria, New Zealand. And it was really great to be down in Sydney for the Smart Cities Week conference he had down there back in October. The Smart Cities Council. And then another large organization is GRESB, G-R-E-S-B. Not sure you've heard of that one, but it's the Global Real Estate Sustainability Benchmark. And what GRESB allows us to do is they evaluate global real estate portfolios to see how they are performing on the ESG criteria. And now more and more of the big real estate investors are getting interested in ESG. Environmental, social, and governance. Frankly, I'm a little bit more interested on the environmental and social aspects, but they are reviewing $3.5 trillion worth of real estate portfolios. So that's a lot of real estate. And what they're causing is to have a lot of these investors become more aware of what proper things to do. And we're trying to align their investment activities toward smart, sustainable cities. We also collaborate with Architecture 2030. They're based in the U.S. And Ed Masria, who is the founder, he is an advocate of designing and building our built environment carbon neutral by 2030, hence the name Architecture 2030. Yeah, so those are a few. we have more that we collaborate with, but just to give you a flavor of what kind of global organizations we work with: Smart Cities Council, GRESB, Architecture 2030. Oh, I must say, I'd like to add one because it's MIPIM. MIPIM is the largest real estate conference in the world, and they also allow us access to their community, which are the real estate investors and developers around the world.
Mm. What sparked your interest in the smart city space?
What sparked my interest? It was certainly not by design. I started to get out of finance about a little over 10 years ago. And it was definitely a journey of discovery. You know, what do I do? Trying to see, is there a more interesting career than making money, right? And I guess it's part of it is like meeting the right people at the right time, you know? I guess it's life is kind of like that. And a friend of mine said, hey, have you ever heard of the Kyoto Protocol? And I didn't know anything about that. So I started to go into conferences all over the world, became a conference junkie, and I was excited to learn about climate change. And then climate change, it's, you know, no one was really interested in climate change, at least the people who had the money, who had the power to do something about it. They were less interested in climate change. And then it gravitated over to sustainability. And some people define sustainability as people, planet, prosperity, yes? So that sounded a little bit interesting that we're not just talking about the environment or the planet, but we're now adding in people and prosperity. And the sustainability started to gravitate over to smart cities. And we think that smart cities must be sustainable to be a smart city. And so here I am, a finance guy who's into smart, sustainable cities.
So what is a smart city or a smart community to you?
That's a hard one. We'll see all over the world that smart cities mean different things to different people. And I think if you look at all the different kinds of definitions, here's one. A smart city is a designation given to a city that incorporates information and communication technologies to enhance the quality of performance of urban services, such as energy, transportation, utilities, to reduce the consumption and waste and overall costs. That's one definition. For me, I think the crucial thing is we have to add people in there, right? So you'll hear a lot of people say, hey, smart city is not just about the technology, it's about the people. So I think I like the Smart Cities Council, one of their definitions where it's the adoption of big data and technology to build better cities, better lives, better jobs for our citizens. I kind of like that one.
Why do you think that this smart city concept is so important?
So important. Well, here's how we kind of look at our mission, so to speak, for reimagining cities. We started this small foundation, but we look at, there are many global challenges. Many people refer to the 17 SDGs. We boil it down to, say, three global challenges. Number one, rapid urbanization. There's, by some sources, like the UN, they say there are over a million people that move into cities every week. So what are the cities going to do about, you know, all the energy that they're going to use to turn on their air conditioners or, you know, heat their apartments in the winters, you know, TVs, refrigerators, you know, a lot of energy, a lot of water they're going to be needing, a lot of waste that they're going to be creating, traffic, pollution, affordable housing, education. So these are all of the challenges that cities face today, because of this phenomenon of everyone wanting to move to the cities globally, right? And the other major challenge, global challenge, is jobs and places. Everyone's moving into the city because they want good jobs. They want cool places to enjoy their lives. And of course, the third, yes, climate change. So we think that smart cities or communities can be a very, very effective way to help battle these three global challenges. It's basically trying to decouple economic growth and greenhouse gas emissions, do more with less kind of a philosophy. And there are places in the world like Copenhagen who are demonstrating that economic growth can continue its increase while their greenhouse gases are decreasing. So they've been successful in decoupling economic growth and greenhouse gas emissions. Yeah, we should have tried to apply that, you know, to all places in the world, right?
Mm-hmm. So I know you do a lot of your work outside Korea, but let's start with Korea first. How do you think Korea is currently embracing the smart city or smart community concept?
Well, maybe because I'm Korean, I'm a little bit hard on Korea, but I think Korea is very behind. If we look at places, many cities in Europe, the United States, and even in Asia, Korea is definitely at the, how shall I say, a laggard in the smart city space. But as you well know, Korea's large companies in electronics, in software, in ICT, we do have, Korean companies do have a good chance of catching up in the race very quickly. They're trying. More specifically, you had, you know, a lot of people talk about Songdo city as being the eco city or the smart city. And a lot of the experts go to Songdo to find out more because you have some articles that show up and they go and investigate. And they have some good things, like they have a nice central park, they have some bike lanes, they have pneumatic tubes for waste collection, they've got cameras all over the place. But many people are coming to the conclusion that it's really not a smart city to what is expected to be a smart city, right? With respect to walkability, you know, just friendliness to the citizens who live there, and jobs and places kind of thing, that's kind of out of whack over there as well. So Songdo city's been around, but now there's some two major cities that are getting the smart city attention, which is Sejong. Korea moved a lot of their government, you know, ministries down south about 2 hours to a city called Sejong. So they're trying to make a smart city there. And then down by Busan, they're trying to make a greenfield city about an hour, I think, outside of Busan, called by K-Water, these rivers, and they want to build a huge smart city there. What they're going to do with it, yet to be seen. Ah, there's another smart city thing going on, which is LH Corporation, which is one of the huge construction companies owned by the Korean government. They are saying that they're exporting smart cities. So they've signed a few MOUs with Kuwait, and I forget, with a city in India, I forget the name of the city, and a few other cities to export, quote unquote, smart cities. I'm trying to find out some more information and details as to exactly what that means and what they are doing. I haven't gotten much data yet, so no confirmed views right now, but not that positive at present point in time. I need to learn more.
Can I share with you some of my thoughts?
Sure.
So when I was in Korea, I mean, I was there 2016, and to me, they were much further ahead than Australia at the time. And so I was really excited. But I'm really keen to, when I go back there, what my thoughts are now that I've learned so much over this, you know, kind of what, 18-month, two-year period. I think for Korea, what I saw was there's lots of research and development happening on one hand with the government. So, you know, you've got your test beds with your connected automated vehicles, you know, advanced transport technologies, innovation, that kind of thing. And then on the other hand, you've got these really capable electronics and IT and really smart people. So the human resource exports. So the kind of exports I saw were human resources and technology. I think the piece that's potentially missing in Korea, and I agree, you'll be much harsher on Korea than I will, being Korean, similar, you know, me for Australia. But I think that livability piece, which you touched on, is really important, like the amount of green space that's available. There wasn't enough green space, even though you could go to a park or whatever, but it wasn't as accessible as, say, let's not compare it to Australia, but even when I was in Japan, there was much more green space around.
The other thing is the traffic. Even though they have a most amazing public transport system, people still drive their cars. So there's so much potential in the mobility space. And I think rather than just looking at connected and automated vehicles, mobility as a service would be something that Koreans could easily get on board with, because it's so small and densely populated. You could easily provide mobility as a service, which would give you the same level of private car. And I found it very interesting that talking to the people in the office that I worked in, everyone still owned a car, even though they lived in the city. And I found that fascinating, because why would you bother with, you know, the public transport? But then you see the roads and the traffic and the congestion is just astronomical. And I think that that's where Korea could really leapfrog in the mobility space, but also in your area, the climate change and sustainability, because obviously we know the air pollution, can see it. And yes, some of it blows over from China, which is not the best, but I think there's a lot to be said in that sustainability space as well, and caring for the environment, because there's so many built up areas, and how do you make sure that the water's clean and the remaining green spaces continue to flourish?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, the things that you said about mobility, there are a lot of things that we could do here, and we do have the right skill sets. Having said that, you know, I kind of address where are we in now in smart cities. We're a laggard, I think, but we can catch up fast. And you put it rightly, it could be in the mobility space, or at least that's one of the areas that advanced very quickly. I do want to make one clarification, though. You know, you said that I'm in the sustainability space and the environment and stuff. And because the mission includes climate change, that smart, sustainable cities can help address climate change, meaning that I'm basically real estate, right? Smart, sustainable cities, I look at two big buckets of activity. One is by the city or the government, and one is by the private sector. Government puts down roads, they put down smart infrastructure, waste treatment, you know, all those kind of things, you know, traffic controls. And those are the things that the private sector could help on, but I'm more interested in the real estate, the built environment. So I want to try to get the real estate investment in the community and investors aligned with the city objectives toward accelerating smart communities. You have to build a building, right? The Code for Smart Communities, which I love, that document that was made by Adam and a lot of people who helped him on that, they define smart communities as smaller components of cities, right? Neighborhoods, campuses, business parks. I like to just throw in mixed-use developments. And they're saying that this scale of development is all loosely described as communities. So that's where we start to get better understanding the difference between smart cities and smart communities. Some people, when you say, hey, I'm into smart cities, they go, oh my God, how do we make Sydney smart? Or how do we make Seoul smart? And it's kind of confusing, because some people kind of think that it's going to happen all at once, right? But I like this document called the Code for Smart Communities, because it kind of does away, or I should say, clarifies the fact that when you say smart cities, we're actually talking about accelerating smart communities, right? And it's because we believe that these community scale transformations is the most effective way to influence, or I should add, positively influence whole cities and regions, right? So we would have these pockets of activity or real estate developments that are smart, very green, very affordable, to show others, wow, this can be done. And then that would attract the private sector to invest more of their money to help proliferate smarter and greener communities. That's kind of where we're coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the smart community term, for sure. I mean, that's why I went from the Smart City podcast to the Smart Community podcast.
I noticed that. That was very good. That was very nice.
Thank you. Because when we say smart city, again, we think Seoul, Sydney, buildings, like only the physical kind of technology and infrastructure and that kind of thing. But when you say smart communities, exactly like you said, I think there's two nuances, which is the overarching umbrella term. So you can have smart cities, smart towns, smart regions within a smart community. But then underneath that, you also rippling through that is a whole bunch of smart communities, exactly what you were talking about, which is that precinct level and then the community within town or a region or, you know, that kind of level. But then I think it doesn't mean that we throw away the smart city term because people know that, but actually trying to shift that language so then we are talking about communities. Because I also think when you say community, people think people, they don't think physical. And I think that's really important because then the people part of it is front of mind. So then we don't get caught up in, because I think what you're talking about in Korea being laggards, and correct me if I'm wrong, which I know you will, there's lots of focus on tech. And maybe that missing piece is that people and livability piece, making sure that we don't forget about the people, say for Songdo, for example. So I went to Songdo when I was there and the missing piece was the people, because there was lots of technology and amazing innovations and green stuff and that kind of thing. But the culture and the people and the arts and all that kind of stuff was missing. Not to say that it won't ever be there, because I have hope that it was just ahead of its time, but I don't know, I'm not sure. But I think exactly what you're talking about as well, that the planet, people and prosperity, nowhere do we talk about technology, but we know that technology can enable those three things.
I'm not going to correct you. I think I absolutely agree with you. You know, we're all saying the same thing, right? If we all step back, all the IoT guys, we need the technology. And then when you talk about technology, someone's going to say, no, it's about the people. And then we talk about people and they say, no, it's about the planet. Right? So we're like kind of jumping back and forth at pieces of this puzzle. But I like to remind people, I have this, you know, anyway, when I have speaking engagements, I have this like animation of all these words moving around on the slide and then comes together in a very structured pillars that are all part of smart, sustainable cities. So I think we need to step back, look at the bigger picture, and everyone is right, I think.
Yeah, not get caught up, I suppose.
Yeah, I do believe that there is some language gap, barrier. Like when we say, when the money guys say real estate, right? What do the engineers or the sustainability people think, right? They can't really relate to that. But if you say built environment, then all the architects and engineers and sustainability people, they jump on that and say, yes, you know, we need to improve our built environment, health and well-being, natural daylighting, natural ventilation, blah, 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 right? But to the real estate guys, built environment is real estate.
I like that analogy.
Well, I faced that for the last 10 years, trying to work together with different disciplines. The architects and engineers, they have the smarts to create beautiful spaces, but they need direction from the owners. And the owners don't really understand sustainability or, you know, high performance design. So they just say, just hurry up and get the building permit. You know, you got the law, you have the code, just hurry up and design me something here. And because they use different words, the architects want to do passive design strategies. The owner says, I don't care, just design me a building, right? Maximize my investment returns. But if the architect said, yes, passive design is to help maximize your investment returns, and this is how it relates, then we have a conversation.
Like a translator.
Yeah, that's the gap that we try to fill. I think that's the gap that finance people can fill. And I'm a finance guy in a smart city space, and I don't see many finance guys. And I wish there would be more finance people. I don't mean that bankers who are selling green bonds or green sustainability finance. I think there's a lot of greenwashing there. So you lend money to a solar farm and you call that a green bond, whereas they're getting the same returns. It's not any cheaper or better terms and conditions for that renewable energy project, right? But just because it's a solar panel thing, you know, they call it a green bond or climate bond. I think there's a lot of greenwashing going on. I mean, finance guys who are a little bit passionate about accelerating smart cities, smart communities, because it's good for people, planet, profits, right? and understanding that and really driving that forward and working together with the other stakeholders like architects, engineers, and city. We need more finance people.
Okay, call out to finance people.
And I'd love to have some provocative discussions with any and all finance experts out there who are interested in saying that Cha is wrong, or that I will provoke and say it's a lot of greenwashing, right? And then we can start there with the discussions and then go down into the details and say, okay, so what kind of interest rates do you charge on this loan that you extended to this which project? And it will be the same to many of the other loans that they make. But they make it like it's better terms and conditions because it's a, you know, something good, something sustainable, something related to climate change.
I think there's a lot of smart washing out there too. Okay, let's talk about some of the projects and things you're working on at the moment, because I know that you work globally, so I'm keen to hear about
it. Well, one project is, I like to say, let's get some shovels in the ground. Get it off of the PowerPoint presentations. Stop talking and let's start doing. And if we want to attract a major private sector, 60% of global wealth is in real estate. And that's the private sector that I focus on, trying to attract the real estate investors, get some shovels in the ground. So I was hired. We're basically a nonprofit think tank, but occasionally we do take on advisory roles. And there is a project called Lakeview Village in Toronto. And the owner there, he has vision for a smart, sustainable community. Almost exactly how I would love to see a smart community development. Waterfront, Toronto, three or four train stops away from Union Station, which is downtown Toronto. 177 acres. 8,000 apartments in a medium density type of development. They will have retail. They will have an innovation corridor, which is, you know, office space, but more, how should I say, themed toward innovation, technology, things like that. And they hired me because I said, hey, Fabio, he's the CEO. I said, I think I can help you help design and build your development smarter and greener without overinvesting. That's my 15-second elevator pitch. Smarter and greener, and then that doesn't really spark interest if you just say smarter and greener. But if you say smarter and greener without overinvesting, that's the part that catches people's attention, or at least the money listens to. Well, how do you do that? If you say just, oh, I can help you smarter and greener, they say, wow, that's really cool. Thanks very much, Cha. I'll see you tomorrow. But if you say without overinvesting, they'll say, oh, that's very interesting. How do you do that? And then there we can have a more detailed discussion as to exactly how we could do that. So this year, we're going to try to get shovels in the ground next year. So this year, we're going to be a lot of designing, engineering, and financial modeling. And I'll be there next month in Toronto for meetings with the owner and the entire team of consultants to brainstorm ideas and plot the year out going forward.
When will you be there?
Right before MIPIM, mid-March. And so that's a really cool, and these guys are pretty cool. And they're very willing to share what they do, what they are doing. A little bit opposite of Sidewalk Labs in Toronto. These guys are very open. They've been having meetings with the community to hear out what they would like to see. They're making a waterfront park there for the citizens and building an access where the public can just walk down a tree-lined park onto the waterfront park, which is kind of connected. So you can ride your bicycle to downtown Toronto, I believe, right along the water. They want to connect that, right, through their property. I think the other major one that I'm working on is this is new development. The other is trying to address existing stock, right? What do we do about the buildings that have already been built? And many have been built very inefficiently. I work with Switch Automation. It's a company that collects primarily building energy data. They don't try to sell you sensors, but they will go in with their cloud-based platform and just first see what we have. What kind of data do we have in here? And then they would analyze that data, put it up onto dashboards, and look for opportunities to save money, save electricity, save gas. And I like that because you reduce energy consumption, we're reducing greenhouse gases. And if you reduce your energy, you're also reducing your energy bills, thereby increasing profits for the owners. Win-win, right? Owners get more profit, the planet gets less greenhouse gases. And in the process, what we're looking at is something for the people within the buildings is to monitor health and well-being, not just energy efficiency, but, you know, how much fresh air do we have, the levels of CO2. I'd love to get toward measuring VOCs and formaldehydes, which are very toxic to our health, right? And as long as you're monitoring these things, then you become aware. And then when you say, hey, this is not acceptable, let's do something about it. And as soon as you deploy certain countermeasures to make your air healthier, to drive down your energy, increase thermal comfort and stuff, you'd have immediate feedback as to whether that particular solution works or not, because you're collecting data on 15-minute intervals. You'll know right away, right? So switch automation, Deb Noller, she's the CEO. Their CTO is actually based in Sydney. They have offices in Denver and a couple of other places around the world. Deb has invited me on her board of advisors. I think it's a great solution. There are many good solutions out there, but I happen to work with Switch Automation, and their clientele includes a large real estate funds like Oxford Properties out of Canada. WeWork, they provide their solution to most of the locations at WeWork, and Microsoft, Wells Fargo Bank. So her clients are pretty well-known big businesses. So I'm hoping that we can gain some traction to help other owners increase profitability, drive down greenhouse gases, and hopefully make it so we have a healthier environment inside the building.
I'll have to get Deb on the podcast.
Oh, she'd be great. She's very passionate, very, very knowledgeable in this space. I can introduce you. But, you know, that's a prime example of people, planet, profit, right? Right. So you put on your Switch platform, you have 200 buildings in your portfolio. What do we just do? We increase profitability for your owners because we're driving down energy bills. We help the planet because we're driving down energy bills, because we're driving down, you know, CO2 emissions. And for the people, we're trying to allow them access to information as to how healthy the air they're breathing.
And they can hopefully drive down their energy bills as well.
Oh, yeah. You know, just through that, you know, I carry around a little monitor sometimes that measures VOCs and formaldehyde. And when I'll go into a business meeting and I'll turn it on, they'll say, what is that? And say, yeah, this is what measures your air quality. And if it's really bad, I'll just stick it in their face and say, you know, you're breathing in this crap, right? Wouldn't you want the building owners to get rid of this so that don't we have a right to breathe clean air? So, yeah, I can be provocative at times.
Okay. Well, I'm keen to hear your answer to the next question then, because it's about integration. So how do we better integrate across, you know, the different disciplines, governments, and industries? I imagine you're trying to do a lot of that a lot of the time.
Yeah. Integration. How do we do that? That's a tough one, but exactly what your question asked was, how do we integrate across disciplines? We have to integrate across disciplines, but we're not doing that effectively. You need to have government and the private sector. And within the private sector, you need some disciplines like architects, engineers, and finance, right? They have the money, they have the know-how, the skill sets. Most government officials, they're, you know, administrators. They don't have deep knowledge as to what passive design strategies can help them reduce their energy consumption of buildings 20, 30, 40%, sometimes 50%. And passive design strategies are very, very cheap. That's like the low-hanging fruit, right? Do they know about energy modeling? And the finance people need to know about energy modeling so that they can model in some of those metrics early on into their financial model. So how do we do this? I think that maybe the governments are pretty cool because smart cities, they started to make like chief information officers, chief resilience officers, right? I think that they need to create a public-private type of forum where you get some experts from the private sector and hash out some of the things that the priorities that they need to address. I do not see many cities measuring the total energy consumption of all of their buildings in their cities. Seoul has some of that data here and there. About 2 or 3 years ago, I kind of compiled that. And what we discovered was there's roughly 650,000 buildings in Seoul, and we are using X kilowatt hours of electricity, the gas we can convert into kilowatt hours. You multiply that by 10 cents per kilowatt hour. And what we found out is Seoul buildings, they're using about $10 billion of money every year. We can calculate the greenhouse gases as well, right? But if we had an aim or an objective to reduce that 10% over the next 2 years without spending too much money, getting that low-hanging fruit, reducing energy by the way we operate buildings and shutting off lights, right? We can save 10% very, very easily. That's at $1 billion a year that we can save if we had this citywide initiative and give back the incentives to the people or use that money for some other cool social good things that they can do, right? Why spend it on paying for wasted energy bills, right? And I would love to see more cities take a serious look at energy is one of the things we need to manage citywide. So why don't we measure it?
And I think opening it up as well, that transparency, because once it's in their faces, like you were saying, people start caring about it, right?
Right, right. And a lot of NGOs that I speak to here in Korea and abroad, you know, they say, hey, Chai, you know, go good, but what do we do? What can we do to help? What can we do to save energy bills? They don't know. And it's hard to find experienced or knowledgeable people and handymen who can implement that. On purpose, when people come into my house to fix the boiler or, you know, fix the air conditioner or whatever, I ask them questions, right? When I did the interior renovation of our office, I said, hey, isn't that particle board? And he goes, yeah. And I said, well, I asked the owner not to use building materials that have high formaldehyde and volatile organic compounds. And that, my friend, is high in those toxic substances. He goes, no, this is okay. And I said, hey, you're talking to the vice chairman of the Korea Green Building Council. I know what that is, right? I said, stop construction now. And I see some of that material has already been installed here. Please rip it out before you continue with your construction. That day, no construction, all the workers sent home. Owner called me, said, what happened? I said, you and I, we discussed, I don't want toxic substances in our offices, and didn't translate down to your workers. So we don't have particle board in our office. And we have good air quality. But, you know, that's disgusting how you have to, like, police it. And that's one of the big difficulties, I would guess, why we're not there yet.
Yeah, because not everyone's going to know. They're just going to trust that everyone's doing the right thing, right?
So I would love to have, like, a huge, like, a South Barangaroo type of development somewhere plop in the middle of a city, and it's more of a community. South Barangaroo is more toward the business and that kind of stuff, but tone it down a little bit so that the community can kind of engage with it a little bit better. And we are releasing data on a lot of things within that development, green and smart. You have people come and learn. You have kids come for little tours of what they're there. And all the data, which is open data, can be accessed for tech companies or universities, students, startups to come up with better technologies or innovate solutions that are better. You know, that would be a very cool, like, living lab type of a development. That's what I'm after.
Excellent. Well, I'm keen to hear your thoughts about the next question. What are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough?
I would say the 12 years that we have left in the carbon budget, meaning at the pace that we are going, we are emitting so much carbon into the atmosphere that after 12 years, we would have emitted enough. So that's when we get to the point of causing chain reactions of irreversible changes. I would like to say irreversible destruction to our environment. And I'll tell you, Mother Nature, when she gets angry, there's not much that us puny humans can do, right? And I'm really afraid of that. So let's, you know, that's an emerging trend that people are not, it seems like they don't really care. They don't. I read this book once about why people don't worry about climate change. And it was really cute because they said, you know, each one of us, we have this pool of worry that we carry around with us. And we worry about the job, worry about the wife, the husband, the sister, the brother, the boyfriend, the girlfriend, you know, making money. You know, there are a lot of things in life that we worry about or we need to manage, so to speak. And this pool of worry is so full that this new thing called climate change, it can't enter this pool of worry. So it's out there and, you know, lurking, but it certainly can't enter this pool of worry because it's filled up to the rim. And humans don't have, you and I, we don't have the capacity to worry about another thing, you know? Yeah, that was the main message of that book. And I kind of said, wow, this guy, I think he's right on track, right?
But what are we going to do?
I really don't know. It sometimes becomes overwhelming. That's one of the real bad parts of this job. And that, you know, if our mission is to try to help battle climate change, the rapid urbanization, and trying to create jobs and places for these young people to continue living good lives, it sometimes becomes overwhelming. But, you know, we just got to do what we can and try to accelerate as much as we can.
I was just talking to Lisa McLean, I think it was her, that was saying, she kept using the word urgent, particularly she's the CEO of Open Cities in Australia here. And I liked using that because then people react to it because there's an urgency for this smart community stuff because it needs to pull in the green stuff as well as, and people like, you know, it's a flashy term, whereas sustainability, like, you know, that got old real quick. And if you weren't a Greek, didn't get into it. Whereas I feel like this is the term smart city, smart community, whatever you want to call it, that you can actually, exactly what you were talking about, attract those people in that we need in this conversation, because it's not just the greenies. It's not, I shouldn't say greenies, I'm a greenie, but it's not just the people that are sustainability experts. It's not just the technology experts, the finance people. It's actually all of us coming together. And I think that's where this smart community space can really accelerate that, because if we're not listening now, we never will, right?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. So you asked a question a couple of moments ago about how do you think we can better integrate across disciplines? You know, we can't do it all over the world, all at the same time. Poof, you know, everything's integrated, but we can create these little communities of better integrated platforms or forums. And I think city governments should form these little communities to allow the private sector, especially the tech experts and the money. You got to have the money to come in and say, well, I would be interested if it, you know, what do you think the money is motivated by, helping the planet and the people? I'm sorry. I was one of those guys. I was in finance for over 20 years. We were motivated. I was motivated strictly to make more money. And after that, we wanted to make even more money, period. Within the laws designate, you know, define what we can and cannot do. Within finance, we try to make a lot of money. And the planet people and the people, the social, you know, sustainability stakeholders, the environmental sustainability stakeholders, they keep on emphasizing, oh, no, you money guys, you know, you don't have good stewardship, or this is the right thing to do, or climate change will destroy us all. It doesn't really resonate with the money, you know. That's my personal view. And I would love to have these discussions in a more of a provocative discussion, right? Because I'm not going to mention any names of organizations or banks, but someone tells me, you know, oh, this bank, you know, they have like billions of dollars in green finance. Wow, that's great. He goes, can I meet them? He goes, yeah, I ask to meet. Of course, the boss says he's busy. I meet one of his staff. I talk with him. I said, wow, how much do you have? Oh, a few billion dollars in green finance. Oh, fantastic. So can you tell me about some of your projects or deals? And they explain, you know, solar farm here, energy efficiency project there, blah, blah, blah. And then I say, oh, can you share with me what the terms and conditions are? Interest rate, maturity, amortization of principal, things like that. The price of the money. And I said, is that any cheaper? Like, can we get lower interest rates? Can we get better terms? Because we're trying to do some good here. They said, and then I said, well, how many basis points can we get a little bit better? Basis point, one basis point is 0.01%, right? So that's not going to move the needle very much. So when they start talking basis points, it's still hard. For me, I don't look at the loans per se. I look at the private sector real estate investors. Could be a lend lease, right? Where they're actually putting in equity. So $3 billion project, they would probably put in equity of $1 or $1.5 billion of their own money from other investors. They would get a little club going and invest that. And then the rest is from bank loans. Half and half, half equity, half loan. That usually means that it's a conservative, what we call capital structure. If you go 10% equity and get 90% bank loans, that's risky. There's a big risk that you cannot pay your interest payments at a certain time. And then that's when they'll foreclose and you go bankrupt.
It's been so awesome to chat with you, Char. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Yeah, it was really nice to chat with you, and thank you for the opportunity to share with you.
No worries. Okay, I just have one last question before we finish, which is, how can people connect with you?
Call Zoe. you know my email address.
I'll have a flood of people wanting to connect with you.
Yeah, I have my email and I'm very active on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and Reimagining Cities.
Website.
We can put all the links in the show notes.
Thank you very much.
No worries. Well, it was excellent to chat with you again. And we'll definitely talk again. I'll send you an email shortly with my Churchill Fellowship update. And that'll be excellent to hopefully see you in Seoul.
Yes.
Okay.
It was fun.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're trying to deal with disruption, not sure what technologies to buy, need to facilitate genuine collaboration, then we can help. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community/consulting.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.